going to leave it over here. Okay, well, everybody, welcome to Yeshiva University. It's a pleasure to see you guys here. I hope that you'll get to love this place as much as I do. We were just talking. I started college here in 1975, and it's now 2011, and I haven't left. So it's a wonderful experience. If I can answer any questions after, during the day, whatever, please don't hesitate. The six concurrent presentations now are a little bit of a taste of some of the Judaic studies programs that are going on here, there are many. I teach in IBC in the Isaac Breuer College, which is a little bit different than the typical yeshiva program. There are three, instead of just Beis Medrash and Shir, the guys who are part of IBC take there are three courses a day. You get to skip one course, so don't tell your parents that you may sleep late or go to a later minyan. But it's three different courses a day in many different topics. So it includes Gemara, but it also includes Chumash or Tanakh or history or philosophy or ethics. And in that sense, it's a very well-rounded program. It's a great program for people who, some people just can't sit in the Beis Medrash for hours. Some people are interested in a broader, more well-rounded kind of formal Jewish education. And so IBC, I think, is a very wonderful option for the appropriate student, as MYP is a wonderful option for the appropriate student, or BMP is, or whatever combination of letters you happen to choose. But our purpose this morning really is to learn a little bit. So what I'd like to share with you and discuss with you is the question of human dignity. Human dignity is, anybody in favor, opposed? You're in favor of human dignity. Well, that hasn't been, thank you very much. So that hasn't been true throughout all of history. In fact, throughout most of pre-modern history, people and societies and governments and philosophers weren't awfully interested in the dignity of every human being. And so, for example, in writing about this, Hobbes, who's an important Enlightenment thinker in the 18th century, the value or worth of a man is, as of all other things, his price. That is to say, so much as would be given the use of his power, and therefore is not absolute, but a thing dependent on the need and judgment of another. So what we generally assume to be the dignity of every human being, just because he or she is born and is part of the human race, was not necessarily accepted and valued, certainly not in the pre-modern world, where a slave, a person born into slavery, did not have the same dignity and worth as other human beings, and really not into the modern age. As a matter of fact, interestingly, the term human dignity does not appear in the United States Constitution, and it does not appear in United States legal literature until about 1946, 1947, when the phrase begins to appear in some Supreme Court decisions. Bill of Rights certainly protected certain human rights, but the concept of human dignity itself wasn't really that powerful and that strong. It does exist in the United Nations Charter, a Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It does exist, interestingly, in the German Constitution, which is adopted and developed and accepted after World War II, and in the Constitution of the state of Montana, believe it or not. And in that constitution, Article 2, Section 4, did some homework. This is like Torah Umada at Yeshiva University. We're understanding Torah through the larger world and the larger world through Torah as well. Individual dignity. The dignity of the human being is inviolable. No person shall be denied the equal protection of the laws. Neither the state nor any person, firm, corporation, or institution shall discriminate against any person in the exercise of his or her civil or political rights on account of race, color, sex, culture, social origin or condition, or political or religious ideas. So human dignity from this perspective is paramount. What about from halacha? How significant, how important, how relevant is the dignity of a human being as far as the Torah is concerned? When we come to Paschen Shiloh, when we come to observe our rituals, when we come to be religious and we live as religious Jews. So what do you think? What should be the highest value? What's the highest value in terms of our religious passions and commitments? To whom, who are we serving What? Who do we have to make happy, so to speak? Who's it about?
Upstairs,
right? We're concerned about God, right? And if you have God and concerns about God, and you have human beings and concerns about human beings, who's going to trump? Who's going to trump?
The human being.
Human being? Right. Why?
Derech Eretz.
Derech Eretz Kadmah LaTorah. Okay, so what does that mean, Derech Eretz Kadmah LaTorah? It's not so clear. We'll have to throw that into the mix. But that means then that if I'm concerned about how you feel or how the halacha is going to impact on you, that that personal feeling is going to trump Shabbos, Kashrus, Tzitzis, I don't know, pick a mitzvah.
No, it's within the confines of the law, obviously.
Well, so then what's the confines of the law? If you say it's within the confines of the law, and according to the Montana Constitution, so the Rashi on the Constitution will say, therefore every decision, every question of law has to be seen through the lens of human dignity. And if it doesn't fulfill the ends of human dignity, then it's not the right interpretation or application of the law. Is that true in halacha as well? Or do we say at times, this is the halacha, this is the bottom line. Who cares? Who cares what you feel? Who cares what you think? This is what you need. This is what you need to do. And there are many, I probably should give more very specific examples, but for at the moment, let's say it's the question of taking a shower on a three-day yontif. Right? So there's a certain amount of kvod habrios, of human dignity, that's involved by the time you hit Friday or Shabbos or whatever it happens to be. But if you say that the halacha is you can't shower, I don't think that's the halacha even without the kvod habrios element, but if it's you can't shower, so that's the way it is. Because within the confines of the law, that's what you're bound to. Well, that's important. And the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Aseh Ritzoncha Kirtzono, right? Make your will like God's will, meaning that we have to defer. God is God, and who are we? And yet, the Meiri, for example, on this Gemara and Brachos that we'll see in a moment, says there is no value greater to a Kadosh Baruch Hu than Kvod HaBrios. There's no value greater. Now, part of that can be understood philosophically. So if you think back, for example, to your discussions about the Greek gods, right? Who are the Greek gods interested in?
Themselves,
right? Only themselves, their own interests, and human beings were merely pawns making doing what was necessary for the gods. Kadosh Baruch Hu is not that way. Kadosh Baruch Hu creates us, and his interest in creating us and in giving us laws, according to the Meiri, is the welfare of human beings. But how does this play itself out? So in the short time that we have today, I want to discuss a number of issues. Number one, kvod habrios means you have to show kavod to whom?
Your fellow man.
To everybody, okay? Your fellow, fellow human, okay? We'll be politically correct now. So fellow humans. What's the source of that? Now, why do I have to show kavod to another human being? So let's put it in the following context. We have a mitzvah of giving kavod to a number of individuals with whom we interact. Right? For example, to whom do you have to show kavod? Your elders, okay? Who else?
Parents.
Your parents, okay? Who else?
A mace.
All right, that's okay. Who else? Yes?
A rebbe.
Who else?
Your neighbor.
Well, the neighbor is the part of the kvod habrios kind of issue, but so we have neighbor, we have mace, but there's one other major specific mitzvah of showing kavod to a specific individual. Not sibling, maybe your older brother, but that's, or older sister.
Yourself.
I don't know, it's an interesting question. We'll have to come to that. That's one of the questions I want to, but it's an excellent point. I want to come to that. The king, the leader, right? You have to show kavod to the king. Now, why, what do the king, the rebbe, the parent, the elder all have in common? Why is there an obligation of showing kavod to them?
They're role model figures.
What's my relationship with them?
You learn from them,
and therefore we'll go back to your hierarchy. There's a hierarchy here, right? Here I am, and here are my parents, right? Here's the king, here's my elders, here's my rebbe, right? So there's a hierarchy, and because I learn from them, because their position in society is greater than mine, I need to defer to them and show them kavod. But if I'm talking about my neighbor, I'm talking about a friend, I'm talking about a stranger, what's the relationship with that stranger? Okay, so I'm not, my problem, I teach this as part of my Jewish ethics class, and it takes about 3 or 4 sessions, so I need about 5 or 6 hours to do justice to this, and I have about 12 minutes left. So what the relationship is between Biat Barucha Kamocha and Kvoha Brios deserves a lot of, I think they're different, and deserves a lot of analysis. But we'll leave that at the moment.
Is it horizontal?
It's more horizontal, right? You've done, if you're a stranger, somebody I meet on the street, what's the difference between you and me? Right? We're, in that sense, we're the same. I don't owe you anything, because you haven't done anything for me, you have no greater position in society. So what creates the obligation of Kvod HaBrios that I have to honor you just because you're you, just because you're a human being? So most of the Mefarshim and most of the commentaries and people struggling with this idea suggest that it's based upon the Tzelem Elokim, that each one of us is created in God's image, and therefore I have an obligation to honor every human being, because every human being is created in Tzelem Elokim. The famous Rashi, the prohibition of leaving a corpse hanging on the tree overnight, the right person was put to death by the Beis Din, the body was strung up on a tree, Baal Tam, you can't leave it overnight because it's an affront to God. It's an affront to God. And the famous Rashi, anybody know? Any students? Twin brothers, identical twins, one is a king, one is a robber, a murderer. The murderer was put to death, his body is strung up on the thing. Everybody who passes by says, what's the king doing there? So we are God's representatives, having been created in God's image, and therefore the obligation to honor another person is really not honoring that person, but honoring God. So it's really not about us, right? It's really about God. But we become the recipients of that kavod. Others disagree and suggest, interestingly, that the term is kvod ha-briot. Would you translate briot?
Creations.
The creations. As opposed, in Israeli law, the law for human dignity is called the Chok Kvod Ha'adam. So when the Chachamim spoke about it, it wasn't Kvod Ha'adam. It's not dignity and honor due to a person because it's a person. It's due because he or she is a creature, a creation of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore created in God's image. Others disagree and say it comes to us. It's due to us because we're created by God, but it's not really covered for God. It's really covered for us. So what's the nafkamina? What is the difference if the kavod is due to me as me, or the kavod is due to me because of Tzelem Elokim?
What if you're not a good person?
What if you're not a good person? So can you lose the kavod? Right? Okay. What else might be? So the question of mechila. The question of, I like my classes to be more interactive. Most of the teachers here do. It's just, there's no time. Question of mechila. For example, when your father or your mother walks into the room, so children are obligated to stand. Anybody do that? You do that. Good for you. Okay. Yeah, right. Okay. So why not? So we have the possibility of mechila, of forgiving honor. Since the honor is due to me as a parent, I can say, I don't want it. Don't worry about it. You can't. Well, okay, we'll leave it at that for a moment. I don't want it, so it's not a problem. Since I'm the baal, I'm the owner, I have ownership over that kavod, I can be mochel. An elder, a rebbe, can a rebbe be mochel as kavod? Do you have to stand up every time the rabbi walks into the room?
You should, yes.
Well, it's a good thing to do, but says the Gemara in Kedushin, the rav shema chalach kvodo, the rav, if mochel is kavod, forgives the honor due to him, kvodo machul. Aye, but if the kavod a Torah, so it's his Torah, it's leave it for another time. It's an interesting concept. What about the king?
No.
Okay, not because?
Because he's the higher general.
Because? Whose kavod is it? It's the kavod of the office. It's the malchus. It's the country. So no matter what you think of the president or you think of the prime minister, right, there's a kavod that is due because it's not about the person, it's about the office. It's about this person representing the nation, the people. So the king who is mochel is kavod, that kavod is not mochel. You have to show kavod. What about an individual? What about me? Do I have the right to say, you have an obligation of kavod habrios, so you have to give a certain amount of kavod to me, but can I have a right to say, no, I don't care. Make fun of me, you know, put the tape signs to my back, you know, do all kinds of things. You don't have to act in a respectful way to me. Do I have the right to do that? Because? So it depends. If you say, do to me as a minority of commentators do, then I have the right to say, make fun of me, do it, et cetera, et cetera. But as most of the Mefarshim say, it's not my kavod, but it is the kavod of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Tzelem Elokim, then I don't have the right to be mocha. I have to, says Rav Kook, I have an obligation to demand that others show me respect. And it's not gaiva, there's no arrogance here, there's no ego involved here. There's an obligation to, you have an obligation to honor me, and I have an obligation to, and I have a right and an obligation to insist on it, because it's really about the Tzelem Elokim. It's really about the Tzelem Elokim. Not only that, he spoke about self, honoring oneself, would be the same thing. That even how I treat myself publicly and privately, that needs to be done with dignity, because it's the Tzelem Elokim that I'm honoring. So think of the implications of that, emotionally, psychologically, personally, religiously. Yeah, I have 5 minutes left. So this concept of Tvor HaBrios plays itself out in halacha. Because, as one of my teachers, Rabbi Moshe Bezin, Zichrono Livracha, used to say, we're going to learn it, not about it. Right? Yeah. So text is important, yeah. And you have a text here. So we'll look very, very quickly. What happens if there is a conflict between Kvod Hashem and the Kvod HaBrios? So if you look at the fourth line of the Gemara from the top of the page, this is Brachos, your test on the base. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Hamotzi Kiel Ayin Bevigdo. So you're walking down the street and you realize in the middle of Amsterdam Avenue, right in the middle of the open house, there are dozens or hundreds of people here, right, that you're wearing shatnez. Your clothes have shatnez in them. It'd be a violation of a Torah principle. Truth is, I like the Rambam's formulation a little bit better. The Rambam discusses this, not that you look down and realize that you're wearing shatnez, but your friend is walking down the street, and you realize that your friend is wearing shatnez. So what do you do? So says the Gemara, Poshtan afilu b'shuk. You go to yourself, or you go to your friend, and you tear the shirt off his back, even if it's in public, even if there's lots and lots of people there. Why? What's the reason for that? Person's violating an issur d'oraita, right? Chil Hashem is involved. It's to go around prancing around proud that you're violating an issur d'oraita. It has to be stopped.
Was it proud? He may have been
we'll see. So tear it off, even in the street. Why? My Tana, what's the reason? The pasuk says in Mishle, Ein Chochma V'Ein Tzuna V'Ein Eitzal Neged Hashem. There's no rationalization, no rhyme or reason, no political correctness when it comes opposite God. Hashem says, don't wear shatnez, don't wear shatnez. The Kvod Hashem trumps the Kvod HaBrios. Okay? Kol Makom Sheyeshchil Hashem, wherever there's a desecration of the divine name, Ein Chokim Kavod Barav, who show respect to no one. So in Chokin Kavod Barav, we show respect to no one. So in this question, Halacha Lemaase, whether the Kvod HaBrios trumps the Kvod Hashem, or the Kvod Hashem quotes the Kvod HaBrios, it appears that the Kvod Hashem will trump. The reason for that, as we suggested, is that the Kvod HaBrios is really about Kvod Hashem anyway. Right? That being said, if you skip down now 22 lines, there's a Tosfos on the right-hand side, Rov Aronos, you see that? It's the second Tosfos. And look up a couple of lines where there's an asterisk next to the word Gadol. Okay, so Tashma, Gadol Kvod HaBrios, so great is human dignity, Shadoch Elosa Seshava Torah. It overrides a Torah prohibition. Wait a second, says the Gemara. We just said, Ein Chochma V'Ein Tzvuna V'Ein Etzal Neged Hashem. The Torah always trumped human dignity. So how can you say this? So the Gemara says here, it's most saucer, a derabana, that when the Chachamim made whatever decrees or mitzvahs or rulings they did, that Kvod HaBrios automatic was taken into consideration. And they didn't apply their strictures when there is a Kvod HaBrios issue. But on a Da'araisa level, the Da'araisa with Trump seems at this point to trump the Kvod HaBrios in the Gemara. So let me give you a few practical halacha l'maisa applications that would play a role. It's the old stuck in the bathroom on Shabbos and there's no torn toilet paper, right? So what do you do? So tearing the paper would be an isur d'araisa if we tear it in a nice, neat fashion. But if we tear it kala achar yad, we tear it in a non-normal way, where we don't tear it along the dotted line where the manufacturers want us to tear it. Many of the poskim say it's only in Isur de Rabbanan, so it's not a problem. I had this question actually practically when people were in a hotel for Shabbos, and you know, now that they now have handles on the urinals and the toilets, and it's automatic, and it's electric eyes. And what do you do if you're stuck there, it's 9 o'clock Friday night, and Shabbos is not over until 10 o'clock the next night? You're allowed to move. But there again, the prohibition of instigating the movement of the electric eye is probably only to Rabbanan anyway. So in the case of Kodah Brios, certainly allowed to move, and you can even use the facilities in that manner. One of the famous cases in which this applied was in the case of the Ramah, of Moshe Isserles, 16th century Poland, the famous Ramah, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, had the following scenario. It was a Friday afternoon, and the entire town gathered for the wedding of a certain young orphan girl. It was very common in those days for weddings to be Friday afternoons because, number one, people were around. Not like, you know, they didn't have cars to get from one place to another. And in poorer communities, you know, the Shabbos meal, the Shabbos chicken became the wedding chicken. So you combine the Shabbos Seuda with the wedding Seuda, and I guess you didn't have to pay for a band and for a photographer and for a videographer, so the costs were down. Because this girl was an orphan, people in the community made contributions and pledges towards her dowry and towards the wedding expenses. When they sat down to sign the ketubah, and in those days they didn't have a calligrapher who did it 3 months before the wedding, and the terms were just automatic, parties negotiated the ketubah, and there was usually a fight and disagreement, which side was going to provide what and how much. And in fact, that's what happened here. And as they argued and argued and argued, it went on and on and on. Candle lighting, I'm not sure exactly what time of year, it was 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. It was dark. Shabbos had started hours before, and they finally came to terms. What do they do? It's Shabbos. You're allowed to get married on Shabbos?
No
weddings on Shabbos. But the Ramah was afraid if they didn't go ahead with the wedding, this poor young girl won't be able to get married. The agreement will fall apart. People who made pledges may not want to pledge the money, and was afraid that this young woman would not be able to get married again. And so the Ramah performed the wedding on Shabbos. Why? So the simple answer is, why can't we have weddings on Shabbos? What's wrong with the actual ceremony? Well, Shabbos is not a simcha. And it's an interesting point, but Ein Marvin Simcha B'Simcha means don't push the wedding off to Chol HaMoed. So that's other reasons. So it's not a question of simcha.
It's a contract.
It's a contract. And what's the problem with making the kinyan or a contract on Shabbos?
They
don't
have to sign.
So you have to sign. You may come to sign, right? In general, business, it's the essence of Chilul Shabbos as far as we're concerned, it's technically, in terms of malacha, only an Isur D'Rabbanan. Because if you have a business deal, you're going to write a receipt, you're going to write in your ledger, and so the actual act of writing is the Isur D'Oraita. The act of engaging in business is an Isur D'Rabbanan. Don't make a transaction lest you come to write. So the Ramah said very simply, here's a case of Kodah Brios. The Isur is only the Rabbanan, not a problem. He winds up writing about a 25-page tshuva. Says why? Because it's so radical, people won't believe he's actually doing the right thing. But the answer was very, very simple.
What about the Holocaust when the people were partisans or so, and they were with Jews, and let's say there were no rabbanim around, as long as you had two kosher eidim, you had a ceremony.
Right.
The ksuba is really to protect him in terms of a divorce.
Correct. Well, sorry, but it was about the act of kinyan itself was really what the problem was here. And the giving of the ring is an act of a kinyan, which would have been Isur D'Rabbanan.
Should that be a
chazak? Okay, so I only have 30 seconds. Anyway, there are numerous, Aaron Lichtenstein writes in his article about Kodah Brios, that Rabbi Soloveitchik, his father, has said to him that when he comes to Paskin Shaila, he always tries to figure out what will be the impact on the people involved. How will this play out in terms of the Kodah Brios? And then he goes back and tries to justify that halacha l'maaseh. It's not always possible. There are times when the halacha is the halacha, and despite it all, there's nothing that we can do about it. But where it can be, says Rabbi Lichtenstein, it's his impression that every true gadol operates in this fashion. They're just afraid to tell it because people won't understand. Which says a lot about the community as well. So this is the Rabbanan, and even in the D'Araisa level, and I'll end with this, if it's shogeg, if a person is not actively, intentionally violating the prohibition of the mezi, but it's accidental, is unaware, then you don't have to act immediately. Or if it's only the shah, it's only temporary, you don't have to act immediately. The idea that I wanted to share with you, and there's a lot more that we can say, I need to say about this, is that the purpose of Torah, the purpose of mitzvah, the purpose of a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, takes into account not only our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, but takes into account our relationship with every other human being with whom we meet. And as we apply the halacha, as we express the halacha, as we fulfill the halacha, we need to take that into account. Because ultimately, the impact that it has, that it, positive or negative, has an impact in terms of Kiddush Hashem, Kiddush Hashem, and needs to take into account the Kvod HaBrios, the dignity of every human being and their feelings, because that's a reflection of their Tzelem Elokim and their own innate dignity that stems from that as well. So thank you all very much, and good luck. We hope to see you in the classroom. Thank you.